men's, their house, and she and I would meet over there so we could have sex. And for whatever reason, there was this one time we forgot a condom, like it had fallen off the bed and had slid under the bed, and we just didn't know it was there, right? So I took this couple out to make amends to them because they were the ones that were the most affected by what was going on behind closed doors, and they knew about it, and they were really good friends with both. Real messed up situation. And so I take them out to dinner to make amends to them all, and I'm making amends for putting them in that situation and robbing the circle of friends of emotional security. And, you know, I also used y'all's condo to meet, you know, to meet her there. And, you know, we would have sex there. And they looked at each other, and they were like really like, it was almost like a look of like discovering something, I guess. This whole time, look, I made this amends in 2008. They must have found this condom sometime in 2003. Well, this whole time, they didn't know where this condom had come from. And both of them, at certain times, had thought the other person had cheated or something. And I showed up to make that amends 5 years later, and they got free. They finally knew where the used condom had come from. What if I had not become willing to make that amends? Maybe. So, what happened there? So I stalked my ex-girlfriend one night because I thought she was cheating on me. I was paranoid. I was tweaking out. I was doing a bunch of coke. I bust in. I catch him in the act. I get a little violent. I threw her up against the wall. I threw him back down on the couch. I screamed a bunch. I drove over to her sister's house where she was living. I dragged all of our belongings that were shared and put them out in the middle of the street. And I'm talking, this is like 7 o'clock, 7:30 in the morning. And I'm rolling in my car over and breaking all this shit and backing up and fucking just tearing everything up in the front of the house. And I proceeded to assassinate his character. I had people cut him off. I did everything in my power to like just make this dude's life awful. So when I got sober, this guy was on my never list. I was never making amends to this guy, right? I made amends to her. I realized that I had pushed her away, that she didn't leave me for another man. I'd pushed her into his arms because of the way I was, you know, behaving as a boyfriend. 4 years, I think this was 2010 or 11. I'm mixed up on like when it took place. But one day I'm out. I had a sales job, and you know, I was traveling all over Atlanta for my sales job, and I happened to be going down the street where I know he's a bartender, and this voice or this thought, whatever you want to call it, you can make amends to Tony, and I'm just like, I'm not doing that. And then like a few more, you know, moments, because I'm coming up on it. And then finally it's like, well, it's the middle of the day. He's been bartending here for years. The chances of him having a day shift are slim to none. I can go in and see if he's there. And then I can tell my sponsor, you know, I tried to make the amends, but he just wasn't there. I'll just try later down the road. I go into this bar slash restaurant in the middle of the afternoon. It was like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And he's standing right there as soon as I walk in. And so I walk up to the bar, and I was like, hey, what's up, man? And he's like, hey, what's going on? And I was like, can I get a few minutes? I don't recommend making amends to this to any of my sponsees. You're supposed to schedule them. This just worked out the way it did. I know God's going to throw us into situations, but do not follow these guidelines when you're making amends. Try to call and set up the appointment. Don't catch someone off guard. And I can say that that's happened. I can count on one hand how many times this has probably happened to me. And so we sit down at the bar, and thank God I was taught that I was looking for my own faults and my own mistakes. What if I showed up to clean up my part? I was going to expect him to clean up his part for fucking my girlfriend, right? So we sit there, and I make amends for all the harms that I was clear on. I asked him if I left anything out, and did he want to tell me how this made him feel? And dude, this guy broke down. We both started crying, and he got really emotional, and he like asked for my forgiveness. And this doesn't always play out like this. And this is not even why I'm telling you the story. I'm telling you the story for something else. So And so I asked him what I could do to make things right, man. And he's like, you know, just come in and see me from time to time. So me and my dad started going there a good bit. Me and my dad would come in, and he'd come wait on us from the bar. You know, we'd get free stuff sometimes. I mean, we started, and the more my dad and I went in there, the more, like, almost friend-like we became, to the point where it's like, hey, what's up, brother? Fast forward 6 years, I'm having lunch with a grand sponsee of mine. And we walk in there, and Tony's like, what's up, brother? And he comes up, gives me a big hug. He's like, I'll get you a table in a second. He comes over, waits on us. We catch up like we've been boys forever. And then I sit down at the table, and I tell my grand sponsee the story, and he's like, you're fucking lying. He's like, there's no way that guy had sex with – your girlfriend was cheating on you with that guy? He goes, you guys act like like you've been friends forever. And I looked at the grand sponsee, and I was like, this is the power of making amends. This is what's available to you. I was willing, for whatever reason – I don't know if I told myself, oh, could this be the one amends that I don't make? And one day I end up smoking crack and someone's going to say to me, you had unfinished amends. I don't know if that thinking was going on. All I know is I was willing to repair the damage I had caused, and I made it. And that happened. In 2000, where am I at right now? In 2006, I got fired from this company. My friends got me a job at his dad's company as a benefit analyst. And he vouched for me, and I ended up getting fired because of my addiction to crack cocaine. I wasn't going to work, and I botched like a $5 million case that I was working on. And so I had to make amends to my direct team lead. I had to make amends to the vice president of sales support. I had to make amends to the insurance analyst, and I had to make amends to the CEO of the company who hired me. I don't remember even interviewing for the job. I just had the job. So I met him. I met him at a we sat down in the Mellow Mushroom to have lunch, and I went through the amends process, and I remember asking him what I could do to make it right, and his eyes got teared up, and his son Andy had been a really good friend. You know, we hung out a good bit, and his son was really strung out on meth, and he's like, man, if you could just talk to my son. And I tried to reach out to his son several times over it took me about 2 years to finally sit down with his son and complete the amends, because that was what the dad wanted. But his son would never return my phone calls. And I wish I could report to you that the son got sober, but he was so shot out the day I met him. I mean, there was only so much I could do in that conversation we were having. We actually met at the same restaurant for lunch. But I completed that amends, and I went through, and like I had to make that right. And the last one I'm gonna share with you is a guy that he gave me 1,000 hits of ecstasy on the front, and I disappeared. Several thousand dollars that I owed him. When I got sober, I'd heard around town, because we had some similar circles of friends, that he was looking for me, and if he ever found me, he was going to hurt me. That was a big guy. And this was not just your drug dealer off the street, you know. And this was a guy that I broke bread with, that I hung out with, that I considered a friend, and I had to make it right. And I was instructed I had to make amends to everybody. You know, I did rip off a couple of guys down on the block. You know, the way I made amends was I went and donated money to the Atlanta Union Mission, which is the homeless shelter downtown. I didn't go out there trying to find the guys I robbed. I just went and donated the money to the homeless shelter. So this guy, I went to him. The first time I went to him, I can't remember. I had $300 or $400. I connected with him, and he goes, "Yeah, come over to my house." I'm like, "Oh shit." I was really ambivalent about going to his house, but I'd heard he got married, so I was like, "Okay, so let's go check this out." And so I go to his house, and we sit down. He's got an office at his house. And he goes, man, your timing's pretty good, man, because my life's totally different. I'm not in that life anymore. I've got a wife now. I'm doing this stuff with real estate and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, if you'd come here a year or 2 years ago, dude, I would have hurt you. And so I gave him the first payment. Don't ever show up to a financial amends without a payment in your hand. There's nothing worse to show up to somebody you owe money to, tell them you're about to set up a payment plan and not do anything. And so I showed up with that first payment. And that was July of 2013. 13 or 14. I made my last payment on that on November of 17. This guy, his brother-in-law was a severe alcoholic in detox. This guy who I made this amends with calls me up and says, "Hey, I need you to do me a favor. Will you go pick up my brother-in-law and will you do what you do with all those people with him?" So I got to pick up his brother-in-law. I got to 12-step him. I got to talk to the family. I wish I could report to you that he stayed clean and sober, but he didn't. I got him up to the 4th step and he disappeared. But I knew that amends was complete. I knew that amends was complete. So the question I leave you with is, how free do you want to be? This is the step. This is the step that has to do with that freedom. Because walking into a 10th step, trying to practice awareness and attention to your inner space, and trying to dialogue with your higher power throughout the course of the day, the important aspects of steps 10 and 11, it becomes much easier when you're not being pulled out of the present by everything you did in the past. So I'm going to turn it over to Brandon. No.
Because you hit stop.
Did I?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's still going.
Mm-hmm. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Brandon. So this book was written in 1934, and it says, if your prayers are not being answered, search your consciousness to see if there is not someone whom you have yet to forgive. See, the way that this thing works is that I have to... I find for myself personally, I have to get to a place where the mistakes that I made in the relationship are great enough that person entirely, which also means that I forgive whatever they did to get in that situation. Now, I have, over the course of this work, over the years, the ability to self-reflect and understand what errors I've made is much greater than a lot of people that or much greater than it was for me in the beginning. Say that. And so I've got a ton of amends that I can tell you about that were cool, some big, some small, some very profound. But I feel like I only want to talk about two of them because, like, the good, I don't like making I don't. And because I don't like making amends, I'm very conscious of my thoughts and actions around other people. Okay? I don't want to screw something up to have to fix it. And if I can somehow grasp that while I'm in the middle of getting ready to blow up on somebody, then I don't create the harm to begin with. Okay. Most of the amends that I have to make today are in the energetic field, right? So like just the energy I gave the person as a response to whatever they said or did created separation for me between us. And I clean that up. And most of the time, especially with the person that I have to do this with the most, which is my wife, when I go to make the amends, the response I get is, "Oh, I didn't really even notice." That's pretty cool, right? That means I'm running clean enough that what is unacceptable to me, she doesn't seem to be bothered by. Okay? So this is an example of a little one that happened within the last year that was... So, I drive around a lot and I do inspections, and sometimes I have to do inspections on some houses in very affluent areas that have gates and gate guards, and some of these neighborhoods that I go in are so exclusive that like they got that secondary entrance like 4 miles over that way for the construction people to come in, and then there's other gates inside the big neighborhood that you go in to get into where I eventually have to go. And it's the end of this day, and it's getting dark, and I need to get this one inspection in. And I pull up to this gate, the main guard gate, and I literally drove like an hour out of the way. The way that the bank had put in the request was for Beaufort, South Carolina, and it was actually in Bluffton, South Carolina, right? They're not very close. And so literally I drove by this place to go to where they said it was. I got there and then found out I had to go all the way back to where I was. So it's really 2 hours on the way now, right? And I get to the gate and the lady tells me that I need a construction pass and that they're not available at this gate. Very frustrated in this moment. Not with her, with the overall situation. And I'm like, you know what? Then they're just not going to get fucking paid. And she like looks at me and I'm like, this is crap. This has nothing to do with you, but I kind of go on this little internal rant, not at her, but about the situation. And then she goes, okay, look, I'll give you a pass to get in this time, but next time you have to go to the construction gate, you have to pay the fee, and you have to do all this stuff. And I'm like, thank you. Real polite, right? And so I go in the complex. I don't realize there's a second gate. I have to park and then walk like a mile to get to this house that I'm supposed to inspect and approve this thing. Just complete disaster, right? And I'm feeling it a little bit. And luckily, the from where I parked to the gate that I'm going back out where I was not polite to the lady, it's like 3 miles. And as I'm driving back there, I'm thinking to myself, I think I was probably kind of a dick to her. It's like, yeah, but whatever. I won't ever see her again. No big deal. And as I'm getting closer to the gate, this feeling inside me, this just starts crushing me. And it's like, whatever. That doesn't matter. And I drive like past the gatehouse and I pull over. And I sit there for like 5 minutes because I'm like, should I do it? Should I not do it? Should I do it? Should I not do it? And so I finally get out of the car and I walk over and I said, excuse me. And it was a different lady. And I was like, I came through earlier and I was talking to a lady and I think I was rather rude with her. And like, so they sent somebody else to the gate when they saw me coming because I was so rude, right? And she comes, the other lady comes out and I said, look, I am so sorry. I think I was rude with you earlier. And she, God love her, she goes, you were. And I said, I am so sorry. That had nothing to do with you, and I took it out on you. And that, you didn't deserve that. And you, how did it make you feel? And she goes, well, it makes me feel really good that you're here talking to me about it. And I said, how do I make it right with you? And she goes, you have. And then she goes, you know, I've been working this gate for like 15 years, and I've never, ever had somebody come back that was rude to me and apologize. How many times do you think that she's been yelled at, cussed out, bitched at? And yet, I had to do it. Because what would have happened is I would have driven to wherever I was going, and the next day I would have had to find a way to get back there and do it. Because for me, living that way is unacceptable anymore. living in a way that I'm creating a mess around me is completely unacceptable. So the two that I wanted to talk about part of my story was I had a failed business. That business was, I was investing in properties and fixing them up and trying to sell them for more money. And I like to tell people that the economy turned and that I got stuck sitting on these houses. The reality was that the economy turned and I was a drunk and I liked to go to the strip club and spend a bunch of money that I was supposed to use to fix the house up to, you know, drink and party with my friends. And so I ran this business into the ground. Well, my father had invested in that company. And that company failed, and so he lost his money. And then I had to file bankruptcy and just to kind of like, because this is the type of person I was, he gave me access to, or he gave me use of one of his credit cards to help me because I filed bankruptcy. I couldn't get a credit card, and he thought that it would be nice for me to have a credit card so that I could look like I have a credit card, right? And I proceeded to run up a bunch of money on his credit card and not pay it back. So it's very clear based on my track record that I should not be trusted with his money, right? And I made amends for that. I paid back the money that he allowed me to pay him back. And he's closed the account and he's told me that we're square. So not once but twice I screwed this man out of a bunch of money. And he's getting older and he's starting to realize that maybe he's doesn't want to wait until he's passed on for him to see the benefits of what he's done. And so I live on a farm. And if you live on a farm, it would be reasonable that you would expect a farmer to have a tractor, but I've been doing everything by hand for years, right? And I've priced out tractors for a really, really long time. And I could never justify spending the money to get one. And he calls me up, man that I've screwed out of all this money, one day, and he's like, hey, let's go look at tractors. And so we look at him and he's like, I would like to help you out getting one. Right? Now this would have never happened if he hadn't seen that I had started living a new way of life and if I hadn't made the amends that I made to him and I hadn't paid him the money back that I owed him. And over the last several years, he's loaned me other money and I've paid him back as quickly as I could. And so I've developed this relationship with him where I have integrity with money towards him. And so, you know, you make these amends with people and you don't really know where they're going to go. And it's just fascinating to me that, like, I didn't make those amends with the intent of him helping me out financially in the future, but he's done that because I did it. The other amend is probably the most significant amend. So when I was two years sober, and I was going back through the steps, I was challenged with this idea of, am I really an alcoholic? Okay. And so I sat with this idea. I mean, it was pretty clear to me that I was an alcoholic, but I sat with this idea of perhaps it was just because of her, right? Because of how she treated me and the things that she did, and maybe that's why I drank so much, right? Maybe it was the jobs and the pressure and all these things. And so it was suggested to me by my sponsor to meditate on whether or not I actually was an alcoholic. Now, prayer's a funny thing, right? Because it works. So if you pray and ask God to show you whether or not you're an alcoholic, be careful, because you're going to be reminded of all sorts of things that you forgot about. Okay? And so I made that prayer, and what happened was memory after memory after memory of all these experiences from my drinking that I didn't remember came back to me. And one of the significant things that came back to me was the fact that there was a particular night where I, after work, a bunch of guys went to the club to have a couple drinks, and we did. And then we had a couple drinks, and a couple guys left, and we had a couple more drinks, and a couple more guys left, and we had a couple more drinks, and a couple more guys left. And eventually, it was just me and one other dude, right? He was my type of guy, right? So we're getting absolutely shit-faced at this club, and I'm driving home. I think we ran out of money or something. I don't know. I'm driving home, and it's probably the first time where I'm driving as drunk as I am, where I realize I'm as drunk as I am, right? Got all the windows down. I got the one eye shut. Eating an entire tin of Altoids, right? Probably putting pennies in my mouth or whatever it is that they tell you you're supposed to do. I'm driving on this highway, and I get off. There's an exit 7A and there's an exit 7B. Towards my house, if you do 7B, it loops you back around and sends you the other direction. So when you get off on the exit, there is no way, like you're, you know what I'm talking about. There's nowhere for you to go, right? So I pull off the exit, and they got a roadblock set up. And they got one lane where they're pulling people over and they're checking them. They got another lane where they got the cars all pulled over where the people have been checked and put in other cars. And then there's the other lane where they're letting the traffic come over the bridge. And they put me in the check lane. And I mean, I'm going to jail. There's no way I'm not going to jail, right? And the guy comes up and he says license and insurance. I already had it out. I'm smart that way. And he goes, "Sir, you've been drinking?" "Nope." "One word answers. You've not been drinking." "Nope." "Okay." He walks away. Oh, fuck. It's gone a really, really long time. Like probably 6 or 7 days, right? And comes back. He says, I'm sorry. I think I forgot to ask you. Have you been drinking?" "No." "Where are you going?" "Home." "Where's home?" "Up to the light, turn left." "And you've not been drinking?" "No." "Be safe." Wow, right? So, drive home, pull in the garage, walk into the house, go to the fridge, do what any reasonable alcoholic would do. Grab a beer, sit on the couch, and celebrate that I'm not in jail, right? Somewhere around the time, when I'm sitting on the couch, this is back when you could take the battery out of your phone. I put the battery back in my phone so that, because when we were at the club, I didn't want to accidentally answer the phone because my wife was working 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. at that time. And I wanted to make sure that she didn't hear any of the background noise that was going on. So I had taken the battery out of the phone. Well, I'm home probably 10, 15 minutes. She's working 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. It's probably like midnight. She walks in. She's been dealing with all her fears and all the things that she's had going on. So naturally, she starts to express some displeasure with me. She calls me an alcoholic. I go to the fridge. I dump all the beer that's left in the fridge in the trash can and proclaim that an alcoholic is not capable of doing that. Completely logical, right? Like, and then she tells me I'm crazy, and then I smash my head through the wall, and then all this stuff happens, right? So it's, that's Friday. It's now Sunday. We've smoothed things over. I'm pulling the beers out of the trash can, rinsing them off, putting them back in the fridge because there's Sunday night football or something going on, and it seems like it's okay, right? So this is the memory that comes to me when I'm 2 years sober trying to remember whether or not I'm an alcoholic. That experience got me not drunk driving drunk and not drinking for a day and probably being more cautious in how I drove drunk for years. I went on drinking 9 more years after that experience. Okay? To go on drinking 9 more years after that experience indicates to me that perhaps if I wasn't insane, I was at least a little bit off, right? Most of the harms I created occurred in those 9 years. Okay? The reflection I got out of that experience was also the fact that, can you imagine what her coworkers were experiencing when she was trying to find out what was going on with me? She's calling, no answer. She's calling, no answer. She's calling, no answer. Can you imagine the terror that she experienced when she pulls off that same exit 15 minutes after me and there's a roadblock? My husband's in jail. She's pregnant with my first child. Okay? She wasn't acting very rational when she walked in the front door, and I did that to her. I created this environment of creating insanity for somebody else as a result of how I was. Okay. Now, I did make but my point in all that is just that one night, think about all the havoc I created in the universe with all of her coworkers, probably her coworkers' husband. She was doing, they changed the judgment of how men act when the wife's away. So I've got this list of people that I need to make amends to that I know about. And then there's this other list of people that I've impacted in my life that I don't even know who they are. So the arrogance of having a list of people I know I've harmed and not being willing to clean that up doesn't even acknowledge what I've done to the rest of the world. Okay? This was probably the hardest amend to make from an emotional standpoint because this is the woman that I had 2 children with. She, we shared a life together. I committed to her that I was going to be faithful and with her for the rest of my life. And I failed. Okay. And I forced her into a situation where she had to kick me out because she couldn't deal with me anymore. Too many jobs, too many tries, too much havoc. She was done. Okay. I saw that, and before I was able to propose to my current wife, I had to make sure that I cleaned up the old stuff. And so I did. And when I asked her that question, it was very clear to me how I made her feel. When I asked her the question of, did I leave anything else out? You know how like I have this image in my mind of like what Santa's list is like. It's a couple scrolls. It's like, you know, super long. Like, just go like that and it just goes on forever. I was expecting her to pull that scroll out of, oh yeah, and this, and this, and this, and this. And when I said, how do I make it right with her? Or did I leave anything out? She said no. Which I know I did. But she said no. And when I said, how do I make it right with you? There's a lot more to this. She said, stay sober for your kids. the significance of that, I had no idea. She after that point, she got engaged again to an alcoholic. When she was struggling with him, she would call me for counsel on how to deal with her alcoholic fiance. I would read parts of the book to her, and I would explain what he was doing and what he was attempting. And she would say things like, you know, when you would pull these stunts, I thought I was crazy. She goes, now that he's pulling these stunts, I know it's just how you guys are. And I would agree. And I would say, don't put up with that shit. When she kicked him out and he tried to come back to the house to get some stuff that wasn't his, she called me to change the locks. When he was demanding that she pay him for this furniture that she probably didn't need to pay him for, I gave her the money to do it. And she's like, I don't want you to do that. I said, I want to. She goes, well, I'm paying you back. And then we did the math, and magically, it was the same. What she owed me back was the same amount that I was paying her for my kid's braces. So I just didn't pay for that portion of his braces until the contract was up. Earlier this year, this is where this shit gets real. Earlier this year, she calls me and she says, I'm calling you because you're my go-to guy for this stuff. She says, Mason's my daughter, are on our way over to Anna's house. Anna is my daughter's best friend. Because Scott, Anna's dad, drank himself to death. And she says, I need to know what to do. So I'm able to counsel my daughter and the mother of my children on how to deal with a family whose father has drank himself to death. And I get to be there present for that the whole time, and to be helpful and to be available. And when my daughter had her dance recital earlier this month, when I showed up with flowers for my daughter, I showed up with flowers for Anna because her dad couldn't do it. Okay? And then my daughter went to the beach with Anna and her sister and her mom because Scott's request was to have his ashes scattered at the beach. And this is the text I get. From my daughter. And she said, I just wanted to text you and say that I'm so grateful you got sober. I just had to watch Anna, Lisa, and Lily spread Scott's ashes, and it was the most awful thing. I love you so much and appreciate you more than you will ever know. I love you. How do I make it right with you? Stay sober for your kids so that they never have to experience that. Guys, if you can't tell, this shit's powerful. I was married to that woman for 10 years. Next Tuesday, it will be 10 years since she kicked me out. The life that I live today practically doesn't resemble the life I used to live. You can get free, and everybody else in your life can get free as a result of making these amends. You can experience a completely new life, and so can everybody else in your life. But you gotta do this shit. You gotta do it. And if you don't, maybe your kids will get to spread your ashes on the beach too.
Let's take a 19-minute break. Come back at 7:20.